another rebellion, but rather continuing Imam al-Hussein's rebellion in the form of talks, sessions, keeping the spirit of that movement alive, encouraging others to do things, having the Lady Zainab salamullahi alayha to encourage people to rebel against the Umayyads more openly, as he did less openly. These are decisions that have to do with the Ummah. The conditions of the Ummah are such that Imam al-Hussein, at his time, he has the uprising. The Ummah consists of the people that are in it as part of the followers of the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt. And then there are those who are not so much involved with that, those who are against that movement, like the Umayyad rulers, Muawiyah, Yazid, and whoever came after them in the Umayyad dynasty. These are the conditions on a macro level. We see difference. Imam Zain al-Abidin, salamullah alayh, never engaged in that type of rebellion. Even in Karbala, his responsibility was different than the responsibility of Imam al-Hussein. Imam al-Hussein himself went to the battlefield. Imam Zain al-Abidin was in the battlefield in many ways, but physically, his battle was to remain there and not engage in military battle. The reason we see these differences in the way they led is not because the goal is different or the guidance comes from a different source or their take on the conditions is different. No, the take on the conditions isn't different. The conditions themselves are different.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Halim Hakimun Matin Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyum وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you. Stories from the Past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. This is The Lantern, and thank you very much for joining us on this brand new episode of the show. Coming to you not live from the studios of IRIB English Radio. As human beings, or as creatures who a great aspect of their existence is material and pertains to a world that can only be perceived through the physical senses, we are very much obsessed with our appearance. Let's listen to a short story. And I love the story, especially because it involves puppies. But let's listen to it, and maybe we'll get a better idea of what we're trying to discuss here. And we'll be right back.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear friend, salam. So welcome to this episode of Lantern. Today we have a new story. Let's see what's our story for today. Puppies for sale. A sign above a shop read, "Puppies for sale." Signs like these have a way of grabbing the attention of the children. A small boy, upon seeing the sign, entered into the shop asking, "How much are you selling the puppies for?" The store owner said, "Anywhere from $30 to $50. The little boy removed all the money he had from his pocket. "See, I have $2.37, he said. "Can I please look at them?" The shop owner smiled and whistled. From the kennel, five cute puppies ran out. One puppy was lagging considerably behind. Pointing at the dog, the little boy asked, "What is wrong with that one?" The shopkeeper explained, "The hip socket of the puppy is missing. At least, that is what the veterinarian said. It will never walk properly again." The little boy cheered with excitement. "That is the puppy that I want to buy." "You don't have to buy that dog. You can have it for free." The little boy was upset. He looked up at the shop owner and said, "I don't want you to give him to me. That dog is of equal worth as the rest of the dogs. I'll give you $2.37 now and 50 cents a month until I have him fully paid for." The shopkeeper replied, "Are you sure you want this dog? It is never going to walk, run, or play with you." The little boy lifted one side of his pants up, exposing his crippled legs supported on a big metal brace. He looked up at the shop owner and softly replied, "Well, I don't run so well myself, and the little puppy will need someone who understands. There is no greater disability in society than the inability to see a person as more." There was an interesting quote by Robert M. Hensel, and that is a good ending for today's episode. I invite you to listen to the continuation of this program, Lantern, from IRIB English Radio.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
All right, so maybe this was a too philosophical of a spin on or an interpretation of a very lighthearted, simple, Hallmark chicken soup for the soul sort of story. But it's good to have an analytic, critical view of everything that comes our way, because it helps us find deeper meaning to every situation. Isn't there a hadith that I have never seen anything except that I have seen God before it, after it, and within it? Or when Imam Ali alayhi salam was asked, how do you worship a God that you can't even see? He said, what are you talking about? I see God everywhere, in everything, in everyone. Are we not all Khalifatullah? Or even if we're not talking about human beings, is everything not a reflection, a manifestation of Allah's power, of Allah's grace, of Allah's mercy, of Allah's creativity? And I feel, I personally found that once I, or during the scarce moments where I had a sprint of spirituality and was able to view the world like that, my surroundings, the world, the universe, people, things became so much more significant. And life became so much more meaningful and wholesome and abundant and rich, rather than just viewing things as objects and things and beings. Once I was able to view a flower or a plant or an insect as something that, well, I can't say that Allah spent time on it because He's not bound to time or space, but imagine if He were, like figuratively speaking, something that God spent time on creating. He spent His will on creating, rather. Then you'll find that everything is so significant. Every bug, every insect, every animal, every tree, every flower, every person. And once that happens, you will no longer give yourself the right to mistreat or even neglect something, let alone oppress it. Because you feel, well, God created me and God created it. What makes me think I'm better? Now, I don't want to blur the lines and drift toward the trending mentality, ideology that's been happening the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I think especially vegans. There's nothing wrong with being a vegan, really. If it's your life choice, it's your life choice. I'm not here to judge or lecture or advise anyone. But the thought that, oh, but what made your life more precious than that lamb's or that goat or that cow or that pig or that whatever? Well, there are a lot of things that made my life more valuable than that of an animal. But that doesn't give me the right. But because I'm a valuable creature, and because I was created in Allah's image, and because He blew a part of His own soul, His essence into me, and I possess such a high degree of intelligence and spiritual potential, because there's no limit to my growth, that I cannot allow myself to oppress other creatures because they're not me. Or belittle them because they are different. And that definitely applies to other races, other cultures, other skin colors, other tongues, and or even people of my own race, but with disabilities. You never know how much of God resides in them. You honestly never do. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Communique.
Jean-Luc Brunel, a famous French model scout and fashion industry figure, has been found dead in his prison cell in what appears to be a suicide. Brunel was a close associate of infamous billionaire and sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, who was also supposed to have hung himself in his cell. We've heard about Epstein and the sex trafficking and the victims who've come forward, but why has the media said nothing about the blackmailing aspect that Epstein and his close associate Ghislaine Maxwell were using underage girls to gather dirt on politicians so they could blackmail them? And what about the relationship to Israel's intelligence service, the Mossad? Today, we're going to try and answer these questions and look at the saga a little more carefully. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. On Saturday, February 19th, 2022, Jean-Luc Brunel, a prominent French model scout, was found dead in his cell in La Santé prison in what has been called a suicide. Now you might be wondering, why should this be of any particular interest? Because Brunel was not just a big figure in the fashion industry, he was also a close associate of billionaire sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Brunel stands accused of sexual assault and having partaken in alleged sex trafficking ring run by Epstein. To be frank, he was providing young girls to Epstein for sex. And for lack of a better word, he was a pimp. Now, according to one of the victims, Virginia Gouffray, Epstein admitted to her that he had, quote, slept with over 1,000 of Brunel's girls. And it was from Virginia Gouffray's civil suit against Epstein's close associate, Ghislaine Maxwell, that we know of Brunel's name as well. And this is one day that we see these court documents unsealed, one day before Jeffrey Epstein's death. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was known for living a lavish life and always inviting very prominent figures like actors and high-level politicians and businessmen to fly around with him on his private jet. And so Jeffrey Epstein would go and invite these people to his private islands, right, where they would have intercourse with underage girls that he had trafficked through his associates, such as Maxwell or Brunel, who were running these fashion and model agencies where they would get these girls from. And so following the revelations of this scandal, you know, people are starting to wonder, are these prominent figures, the politicians, the actors, all of these people we see in the photographs with Epstein, did they also participate in this sex trafficking ring? Because many of their names appear on the flight logs of Jeffrey Epstein's private jets. One of those names is, of course, Jean-Luc Brunel. The flight logs list him as a passenger 25 times on Epstein's private plane. And so who exactly was Jeffrey Epstein, the real Jeffrey Epstein? And why are there so many secrets surrounding this whole case? Now, back in 2008, Epstein pleaded guilty for soliciting a minor for prostitution. He served 13 months in jail. But unlike most prisoners who have to stay in prison, Epstein was given the luxury of being able to work out of his office 6 days a week. Now, one of the women who has come forward to accuse Epstein of sexual assault is Maria Farmer. When Maria Farmer was just a young art student, Epstein bought one of her paintings. She was recruited to work as his art advisor, and Farmer claims that Epstein showed her an entire system of secret video surveillance that he had set up inside his property with cameras in the bedrooms and the toilets. Now, Farmer was the first victim to officially report Epstein's behavior and abuse to the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the FBI. However, at the time, you know, the authorities just didn't seem to take her accusation seriously, and there was no investigation. When Ghislaine Maxwell found out that Farmer had paid a visit to the FBI, she began threatening her with physical violence.
What sort of threats has she made against you?
Originally, it started with things like, I'm going to burn your art, and then I'm going to burn your career, and then I'm going to burn you and the house you live in. And then it was, oh, be careful crossing a street. You know, you can get shot in the back of the head. You know, they were threats against my life. And I told the FBI this.
It wasn't just Maxwell, Brunel, and Epstein doing this. The victims have also accused many high-level officials, billionaires, professors, even the British royal family, Prince Andrew, of having partaken in this sex trafficking. Epstein provided them with young girls, which they abused. Now, earlier, I talked about the flight logs and how Brunel's name appears there. But you might be more familiar with former U.S. President Bill Clinton or Donald Trump, whose names appear multiple times on Jeffrey Epstein's flight logs. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was finally arrested on July 6, 2019, on federal charges for sex trafficking minors, and he pleaded not guilty. They then put Epstein in New York City's Metropolitan Correctional Center, also known as MCC, and they put him on suicide watch because he reportedly tried to take his own life. Now, when you're put under suicide watch, that means you're under 24/7 surveillance. But after an assessment by a high-level psychologist, Epstein was taken out of suicide watch, and they put him instead in a special housing unit, or an SHU. And so barely a month after his arrest, on August 10th at 6:30 a.m., Jeffrey Epstein is found dead in his cell by apparent suicide. And it turns out that the guards had fallen asleep and there's no camera footage. And with Brunel's suicide, the same thing. There's no camera footage. The cameras were not working. Now, look, there are many theories floating out there about Epstein's death, specifically because a lot of things don't add up. And even then Attorney General William Barr, he himself admitted to some, quote, serious irregularities.
I was appalled, and indeed the whole department was, and frankly, angry, to learn of the MCC's failure to adequately secure this prisoner. We are now learning of serious irregularities at this facility that are deeply concerning and demand a thorough investigation.
There are also numerous suicide prevention experts who also expressed serious concern. Senior staff counsel with the National Prison Project of the American Civil Liberties Union, Eric Balaban, raised questions as to why Epstein's life was risked by putting him in this restrictive special housing unit, or SHU, specifically when he had shown suicidal tendencies. According to him, an SHU is just not an appropriate thing for someone who's shown recent suicidal tendencies. Now, I can recall as I was attending the extradition hearing of Julian Assange, one of the people testifying was none other than Maureen Baird. Maureen Baird is the former warden of that very prison, MCC, where Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. And she spoke about the prison conditions there, specifically about pretrial SAMs. However, she did note one thing, that Jeffrey Epstein was the first person to kill themselves at MCC since 2013. Now, to be honest, I cannot know how, you know, for sure how Jeffrey Epstein died, whether he simply decided to end his life because of all the pressure from the trial and the public exposure and the lengthy sentence awaiting him, or whether he was killed because he was too dangerous and the elites wanted to tie up some loose ends. But let me tell you something that we can verify. This wasn't the first time Jeffrey Epstein was in jail, as we were saying earlier. He was arrested in 2007. But how come he got off so easily? Well, it turns out that Alexander Acosta was the Miami Attorney General at the time. And while he was being interviewed a couple of years later for the position of Labor Secretary by Donald Trump's transition team, Acosta revealed that, quote, I was told Epstein belonged to intelligence and to leave it alone. And now you see why he cut Jeffrey Epstein a non-prosecution plea deal. If all of this wasn't enough, you know, all of this horrible sex trafficking, it also seems that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and Jean-Luc Brunel had ties to at least Israeli intelligence, if not also American intelligence. You know, Epstein had been known to brag about working for the Mossad. And Acosta just gives him a slap on the wrist because he knows that he's working with intelligence. Now, Epstein's longtime partner, Ghislaine Maxwell, her father, Robert Maxwell, is known to have been both a KGB and Mossad agent. You see, Robert Maxwell was a very, very famous media tycoon who owned 6 national newspapers in the UK. He also famously stole around £500 million from his own workers' pension funds. Now, journalist Whitney Webb, who's done fantastic work on Epstein, she's written extensively about Robert Maxwell's exploits as a Mossad agent in great detail. At one point, for example, Robert Maxwell acquired a company called Information on Demand, which was a front. It was a cutout for the Mossad. And they sold an Israeli piece of software called Promise, right? And this software was sold to governments around the world. And it had a back door inside it, allowing the Israelis to penetrate and spy on the very clients they had sold it to. So Robert Maxwell even sold Promise, this software, to a Los Angeles-based firm called Sandia National Laboratories, which provided Israeli intelligence with direct access to the core of the U.S. nuclear weapons program and nuclear weapons technology. And speaking of nuclear technology, it's also believed that Robert Maxwell is the one who tipped off the Israeli embassy in London about the Israeli nuclear scientist Mordechai Vanunu, after Vanunu had divulged the existence of Israel's nuclear program to the press. Right, Vanunu was subsequently kidnapped in Rome. They flew him to Israel and then sentenced him to almost 2 decades in prison. And when the issue of Robert Maxwell being a Mossad spy was brought up, because you have to keep in mind, he was also a member of parliament in the UK. So this was quite the scandal. And when this was brought up, no one would print it because the press feared being hit with a libel suit, right? So instead, what happened is George Galloway and Rupert Allison, who were both MPs at the time, they went and raised this issue in the House of Commons, exposing Robert Maxwell as a Mossad spy. And by extension, this allowed the British press to start printing about it without fear of reprisal or fear of being sued by Maxwell and his lawyers. And just a few weeks later, mysteriously, Maxwell died after allegedly falling off of his yacht. He was buried with full honors at the Mount of Olives. And you know who attended his funeral? The Israeli Prime Minister and President and at least 6 former and serving heads of the Mossad. Maybe that will give you an idea about how important he was for the Israelis, that all of these figures are attending his funeral. And so that's Ghislaine Maxwell's father, right? But if you thought the only connection here to the Mossad was her father, well, you'd better think again. Journalist Jeff Shalev conducted an interview in 2019 with an individual named Ari Ben Menashe. Ben Menashe was a, quote, Israeli consultant and former arms dealer who also served as a senior executive for Israel's Directorate of Military Intelligence from 1977 to 1987. So this puts Ben Menashe in a unique position to divulge about Epstein and also Maxwell, because he met them both 40 years ago when he was working for Israel alongside Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell. And so in this interview, Ben Menashe is asked, quote, "You spoke about Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell as being part of Israeli military intelligence. Do you know specifically which unit?" Ben Menashe replies that, quote, "Because of Robert Maxwell, they worked directly with military intelligence. I don't know who they answer to." The interviewer then continues, "Would you say that she was an agent as well and in military intelligence as well?" Ben Menashe says yes, yes to both. And so Ben Menashe also makes another thing very clear, that Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, the entire point of their sex trafficking operation was to, quote, blackmail American and other political figures by specifically seeking out underage girls for their friends. And as for Jean-Luc Brunel, he used his modeling agency to traffic girls to Epstein, right? And unsurprisingly, he had an office in where? Tel Aviv, right? An office in Tel Aviv as part of his modeling agency with Epstein. And so here in this picture, you can see Brunel wearing a cap that reads Israel Army. Again, that's perhaps not the most incriminating thing, but do keep it in mind. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Joining me is Graham Elwood. He's an American comedian, podcaster, and writer. He hosts a progressive YouTube show and podcast called The Political Vigilante. He's also the co-host of Government Secrets with Lee Camp. Graham has been covering the Jeffrey Epstein saga for several years now, which even resulted in his YouTube channel being demonetized. Graham, could you maybe just to start off give us a very brief overview of the Epstein case in the simplest terms so anyone can get it?
I have a whole Epstein playlist on my YouTube channel, and one of the most critical interviews I would ask people to watch is where I interview a former child crimes investigator, my friend Eric Oldenburg, who was on the Phoenix Police Department for 24 years, and he investigated online basically child trafficking and child pornography and pretty gnarly stuff. And I mean, he said, you know, anyone can be a pedophile, any socioeconomic status, any ethnicity, any gender, any sexual orientation. Sexual orientation doesn't even necessarily correlate. He said, but the people that can get away with it the most are the wealthy and most powerful. And that's what the Epstein case is. You want to understand how the ruling elites operate? Start paying attention to the Epstein case, because you've got in the intelligence community, specifically CIA and Mossad, are their handprints are all over this. And, you know, like with these examples, just some basic stuff. So when Epstein was arrested in West Palm Beach, Florida in 2008, 2009 in that area, Acosta was the prosecutor, and he was told to that Epstein was a CIA asset and to back off. And that's why he gave him a very lenient case, a charge. Basically, he got the got to leave his prison every day and fly around and literally traffic and abuse girls.
And when you mention powerful people and the ruling elites, you know, you have a lot of pictures, photographs of celebrities and very rich and important personalities that have photographed with Epstein or Maxwell. And we've also heard of this black book full of names. Could you basically tell us what that is and why we see so many important people photographed with Epstein and you know, people related, people in his entourage?
One of the things, and this has been confirmed in other places, one of the things Epstein would do, he'd have these parties with the wealthiest, most powerful people in the world. Billionaires, politicians, I mean, presidents, several different royal families, including the Saudis and the British royal family. And so this powerful person would come in. One of Epstein's butlers would say, "Hey, would you like a massage from a beautiful young woman?" The guy would say yes. And it would be, they'd have sex and it would be a child. And they'd videotape it. Then Epstein would say, "Well, now I've got evidence of you having sex with a child." And they would then invest in Epstein's, he had some like fake hedge fund. So this is one of the ways Epstein got power. And this is why the intelligence community went, "Oh, this is an asset, because now we can use these videotapes as leverage." So what is so significant here, Richard, is when Epstein was arrested in July of 2019, we saw the video and the footage of the guys in the FBI coats dragging out, you know, not dragging, but like wheeling out on dolly trucks, boxes of photos, videos, hard drives, all this stuff. None of it. We have seen any of it. So what we have seen is just these little snippets. We've seen like the photos you've seen online. We've seen the flight logs. And I think the flight logs are very critical as well. They show stuff like Bill Clinton on his plane 26 times, Hillary on his plane two times. Trump was originally thought to only be on one time, but more flight logs were released at the end of December during the Maxwell trial, showing Trump was actually on five times. So to your question here, where is that information? Well, that is the reason why this stuff is getting swept under the rug, because the richest, most powerful people are on video. So that's why Jean-Luc Brunel is dead, is because he probably wouldn't play ball or had information or threatened to make a deal with the prosecutor saying, I'll give you this, these videotapes, give me a lighter sentence. And then all of a sudden, oh, wow, he's so distraught, he's going to hang himself. It's believed that Maxwell has so much information, and she's ruthless. She plays hardball, that she has, you know, I don't know, some people will call it like whatever you are, like a kill switch, basically. My belief is, Ghislaine Maxwell said, if I go down, you
sorry
go
to cut
down.
You off. I was going to ask you about the Maxwell trial, about Ghislaine Maxwell. I mean, how does she tie into Epstein? What's the relationship, and why is she so important to this case? And what did you make of the trial that took place a few months ago?
We'll call her socialite, Epstein's gal pal, maybe even a recruiter. But according to several Epstein victims, including Virginia Roberts Giuffre and Maria Farmer and Maria Farmer's sister, Annie Farmer, she participated. So she's a pedophile. Like, let's be real clear here. And the media will not call Ghislaine Maxwell a pedophile. She is a pedophile and a sex trafficker. And all the women that survived said Maxwell treated them horribly. She treated them like trash.
Well, I mean, speaking of these political connections, one thing that I was really interested in asking you is that, you know, the connections to the Mossad, because you mentioned it briefly at the beginning. If I recall correctly, Brunel, he had one of these modeling agency offices in Tel Aviv, right? And we've heard many times that Maxwell is connected to the Mossad. Could you explain what that connection is and how this relates to the intelligence, specifically U.S. and Israeli?
Maxwell's father was a Mossad agent, and he had a mysterious death, jumped off a boat or some very sort of odd, mysterious death. So you have that. Then you have, as I stated earlier, Acosta said at an interview in 2009 that he was told to go easy on the prosecution of Epstein in Florida because he was this is Acosta's words, not mine, a quote, CIA asset, right? And then you have, again, John Kiriakou said this in my interview with him, and I asked him about the CIA. I said, does the CIA condone getting children for pedophiles? He goes, no, but if you went, I'm going to get a child for this pedophile because if I get him children, then we can leverage that and use him as an asset. The CIA would go, okay, because they just want the leverage and the intel. And then seeing how, again, going back to Epstein's like fake hedge fund, these guys would donate money to it. And I'm blanking on the names. There was another big hedge fund guy. I can't keep track of all their names, but he donated or invested a lot of money with Epstein. And then women have spoken out against him. So what intelligence is doing, they needed people like Epstein to help them get leverage on all of these people. And they were like, look, Epstein, we'll let him have, you know, do whatever he wants on his plane and on his island, as long as he keeps feeding us intel, until he kept getting, I think Epstein was one of these guys that was so egregious with it that then he became a problem and they got rid of him. From the intelligence standpoint, if they've got video of somebody or some evidence, then that person's easy to control. If that person is found guilty and goes to prison, they don't have them. That person has no more power. They have no more leverage. So they need these key people to get all this stuff done. And they've got, you know, leverage on, you know, the Saudi royal family. They've got, and, you know, as I said, John Kiriakou said, this feels like the Israelis. He felt like Mossad, his first gut instinct as a former CIA operative was that Mossad was involved in Epstein's death. This all feels very coordinated and maneuvered by those two intelligence agencies.
There is one really important aspect, though, that the victims themselves have underscored, which is that Jeffrey Epstein used these girls to blackmail powerful people. And so, yes, Epstein and Ghislaine are very obviously depraved individuals who preyed on others. But they also did this to get dirt on the wealthy, on politicians, on businessmen, and anyone that mattered. And they did this in service of Israeli intelligence. They did this at the behest of the Mossad. And again, that's not only speculation. This is now confirmed. It's on the record, confirmed by former Israeli intelligence officials, as we were just going through. And so in addition to all of the already vile, deplorable sexual assaults that this entire saga is mired with, we can see now that there is very clearly a political dimension to it as well. And the fact that the media won't talk about this and never tackle this angle, it really speaks volumes, right? Why do they refuse to talk about this? And how come, despite unsealing so many documents, the courts still continue to keep many of them under wraps? What are they hiding from us exactly? And what could be the other dark secrets in the spy world that we're yet to discover? Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Dear listeners, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته You are listening to IRIB English Radio and you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems, questions and issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their offspring. The answers are based upon the noble Quran and the narrations of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam and his holy progeny. We have in this studio our guest speaker, Sister Radhia Batul Najafi. Salamun alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Dear listeners, if you remember in our last episode, we were discussing some very good issues and topics regarding upbringing, Islamic upbringing of our teenagers. So we were talking about the relationship between parents and teenagers,
exactly.
How parents should behave with their teenagers. And we were talking specifically about the criticism and advising our teenagers, and we told them, in fact, you told our dear listeners that how they have to talk and how they have to criticize their teenagers. So today we are talking about some other qualities of our teenagers. Because
Beautiful.
Teenage is such a stage that where they transform from childhood into teenage. And physically, mentally, and spiritually, it brings so many changes in their life. And when parents face these changes, unfortunately, if they are not aware of these changes, they may act wrongly.
Exactly.
And which will cause so many problems. So our parents should know how to interact with them, how to deal with them, how to deal with these problems.
Exactly, yeah.
So one of those qualities are, you know, our teenagers are very sensitive. Maybe our children, when a child is in the age of 7, 8, 9, 10, he's not very sensitive, yeah, about his, you know, toys, about his daily life chores.
He's even about his looks,
yeah. But when he turns into teenagers, he becomes very sensitive. Yeah, about his look, yeah. about his clothes, about his, you know, belongings. Fellows, belongings.
I've seen families. many times they just stand in front of the mirror, and sometimes they are just questioning about their height, about their features. Yeah. You know, why I have, you know, pimples on my face, and why my eyes and my nose is like that. They're not satisfied.
So my question is, how parents should deal with this problem? Should they tell them, do not spend so much time on your looks or your clothes, or is there, you know, any way how to deal with them?
Beautiful, yeah, beautiful. I remember the beautiful story of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salam, and Qanbar, yeah? So Qanbar, because he was maybe in his late teens, when they went for shopping, so what our Imam, you know, his beautiful reaction towards the shopping. When they went for shopping, look at the Imam's attention. Imam is just paying attention on the youth age of Qanbar. So it starts from teenager, yeah, and it stays till our youth age. So Imam is saying, you have to have this beautiful, chic, trendy dress, you know, compared to me, because I have done my youth age, yeah. So you are more sensitive. So that means Islam, you know, loves that kind of true sensitivity, good sensitivity, yeah, like balanced one. If a young person is more sensitive about his looks, and that is a phase, that is a temporary, duration. So we shouldn't get so much worried about his thoughts. Yeah,
no, I think thoughts. Parents know how to deal with it, they can control this sensitivity. Yeah.
Yeah.
But if they become sensitive towards this sensitivity, so it may increase in their sensitivity.
Beautiful point.
So we have to be moderate. I think the ideal way to deal with it is to be with him.
To understand him.
To tell him that I am with you. It is your right exactly. to be sensitive about yourself, about your looks, about your belongings. When teenager sees, understands that you are with him,
yeah,
then he becomes calm. Then this is a good opportunity for you to deal with it. Then slowly you can control, and you can tell them that how much you have to pay attention about your lookings, about your belongings. Then likewise, you can control.
Amazing point. This is a very crucial point. And, you know, that means you're just putting your feet in their shoes, and you're just letting them know that we are in the same boat and we can understand your feelings.
Yeah. So we will take a short break. Inshallah, after break, we will come back.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Dear listeners, welcome back. We are talking about some very important issues, and we are talking specifically about the sensitivity of our teenagers, because in this certain stage, they are very sensitive, and it is their right to become sensitive. But the problem is how parents should deal with this sensitivity.
Even knowing it. As a parent, if I know this is the normal change in their life, me, as a parent, I get so much peace in my mind. I say, oh, alhamdulillah, you know, this is normal. You know, I'm not the only one who's suffering from this problem and this change. You know, everyone is almost suffering. So even knowing it, when you're talking, because alhamdulillah, we are having our teens, you know, at our home. So when you are talking, you're telling me, I feel so good.
That, yeah, that's wow. Why they say when you understand the yeah. question, it means you have solved the problem, 50% of that problem, yeah?
Really?
If you understand yeah. the question or understand the problem, it means half of the problem you have solved.
Beautiful.
So if parents know that this is their need of their change and need of their age, definitely it will give you a very peace of mind. Then you can deal with it without any problem. So the next quality is they are full of expectations. As an adult, we have limited expectations from each other. You know, husband as a husband from his wife, as a wife from his her husband, from their children. But in teenager, this topic is totally different. They get so much expectations from their parents, especially, you know. Each of everything, they say it is my right, my parents should do for me. They have to put me in a very good school. They have to buy for me very good clothes. They have to give me all these, you know, requirements.
What do you think? Yeah, what is the reason why the expectation increases in this duration of life?
First of all, because this is the requirement of this change. When they turn from childhood to teenage, you know, then they think now they have become a complete human being.
Okay.
They have their own ideas.
That is the reason. Beautiful. Yeah,
yeah,
beautiful.
I think this is the main reason, because now they say that I am a complete human being. I should have my own, you know, mobile, tablet, iPad and whatever. And my parents should...
Yeah, I have to be independent, you know, totally. So no one should rule on me, you know. And sometimes I love this point that, you know, when they are disobeying us in some certain areas, that means they want to tell us, and they're giving this signal that, oh, you know, I'm adult now. I shouldn't listen to you.
Pardon me, we have to stop here. Dear listeners, let's take a short break. We will come back after the break.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Be just between your children when granting things to them, in the same manner that you would like them to be just with you, in obedience and kindness."
Dear listeners, welcome back. We were talking about some very important qualities of our teenagers. So we were discussing about the expectations of our teenagers with our dear guest, Sister Razia Batul Najafi. So as you said, this is their requirement of their transformation, requirement of their age. So again, it depends how we deal, how parents deal about these expectations. I think, again, here we should be moderate. You know, al-i'tidal, as you said in your previous discussions. So if we understand our teenagers and if we give them this right of expectations, then we give them guidelines and tell them that what expectations you can have from us and what expectations you cannot have from us. Then I think these teenagers, because they are very intelligent, they understand everything, and they are, you know, fully adult and human being. So this can help them solve this problem, to have, you know, minimized expectations from parents.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
So the third quality of our teenagers is they want an ideal. Because nowadays, because of the social media, everybody follows some of role models, some of ideals. So our teenagers, they have this quality also.
I totally agree with you, because we love to follow someone. That is in our, you know, nature. But when we are in teen, you know, this quality is in peak. Yeah. And always we are looking for someone. And therefore, you know, I have seen sometimes our teens, they say, oh, I want to become like my uncle. Yeah. Then after a few maybe months, if that person, the teenager, sees some mistakes in his uncle, then he would say, no, I don't want to like become him. I don't want to be like him. You know, he or she's keep changing the role models too. Yeah. Because they are having all these experiments, you know, and studying and analyzing the personalities. And that is something really awesome. We should appreciate it. Yeah, we should like it. And this is a very positive quality too, if we guide them.
If we manage it, you know, it is a very important quality. And through this quality, inshallah, we can guide them and we can instill the love of Ahlul Bayt, love of the infallibles in their hearts. Because they have all the qualities which our teenagers would love to have. But unfortunately, we do not give them those ideal things. So they follow their wrong
role models. Incredible. Inshallah, the next episode would be the best one because the topic is so exciting.
Dear listeners, thank you for joining our program. If you have any question, comments, or any suggestion, you can write us at englishradio@irib.ir, and you can follow us on our social media, Call of Islam Radio, and you can visit our website, parstoday.com. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثتُ لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. The Holy Quran says, لقد كرمنا بني آدم وحملناه في البر والبحر. Man has been created by Allah with special qualities and attributes that puts him on top of all other creatures in terms of importance, in terms of dignity, in terms of honor and respect. The verse which I recited, verse 70 of chapter 17, clearly indicates that man is a superior. We have honored the children of Adam and we have carried them in the land and the sea. And of course we have given them to excel by an appropriate excellence over most of those whom we have created. Human beings have a God-given power of judgment and discrimination and conscience. These are qualities, these are the capacities Allah Almighty has placed in human beings. Everyone understands what is good and what is bad. Prophets were sent to make people aware and strengthen their powers of understanding. The prophets were the external messengers of Allah. We have the internal messenger, which is the intellect, and the external ones who are the prophets. The prophets were supposed to preach the message of Allah, to propagate the message of Allah. And that was to help humanity improve, to achieve perfection, to get closer to Allah. The prophets came to tell us that, for example,